Okay, this is Transfiguration Sunday. So we're supposed to be reading the story about Jesus going up on the mountain with a couple of disciples and him walking around with Moses and Elijah and shining like the sun and the disciples wanting to build booths there, right? Well, yeah, that's what we usually read and talk about. But sometimes we forget that not only is Jesus transfigured, but Jesus transfigures the people whose lives he touches, and he transfigures the institutions that surround him in his own time. And today, that institution that he's transfiguring in this particular passage is the family. You talk about family values. The Greco-Roman world had family values, and they were strict. The paterfamilias, the head of the family, the father, had the power of life and death over his children, over his spouse, over his slaves. There are family values for you. It was a hierarchy in the family. And in that hierarchy, each layer was submissive to the layer above it. Spouses were submissive to that father or husband. Children were submissive to the mother and the father. Slaves were submissive to everybody. That's why when you read those passages in the letters where it says, wives, submit to your husbands, that's not out of the gospel. That's nowhere in the gospel. It is a letter writer trying to get Christians to act more like Romans so they won't stir up trouble. But if you notice, when Jesus refigures family, when he says anyone who does what God wants us to do, which is love God and love our neighbor, there's no hierarchy there. These are mothers, brothers, sisters, parents, children. Anyone who does what God wants us to do is Jesus' brother or sister or mother. Now, in the ancient world, it was really, really important who your people were, because your status within society was defined by which family you belonged to. And if you were in a high-born family, you had a very high status. If you were in a moderately born family, you had a moderate status. And if you were lowly born, forget it. You stayed pretty much where you were born in that hierarchy. And if you did something to shame the family, you could be killed for it. It was that important that you bring honor to the family, just as the family gives honor to you. Now, though we're not quite as rigid about that today, I grew up in a culture where who your people were counted a lot. A number of years ago, I was telling stories in Clarksville at Madison Street United Methodist, a long time ago. And when I finished telling stories, an older gentleman came up to me. He said, "You're Ted Williams' grandson, aren't you?" I said, "Yes, sir, I am." So he started talking to me about my grandfather, and it was very clear that he assumed certain things about me, whom he had never met before, because he knew my grandfather. Now, I never knew my grandfather. He had died before I was born, okay? But he could assume that if he knew who my people were, he knew who I was. If I brought a girl home today, one of the first questions would be, who are her people? Because if you know who someone's people are, you know something about them. Now that was true in the ancient world as well. But what Jesus does is to explode that whole notion of family. The notion that we are only kin to those to whom we are blood kin. Exploding that notion that there is a hierarchy in that kinship, but rather opening the doors to redefining family in ways that are still pretty radical, don't you know? My great aunt, whom I mentioned earlier in the children's time, her name was Minerva, but we called her Auntie. She told me the very first stories I ever heard, stories about her father, folk tales from that region, ballads. She sang me ballads from Ireland and Scotland. She had an interesting way of determining whether she was kin to you. If she liked you, she would claim kin to you. If she did not like you, she would deny up and down all day long that she was related to you at all. Which only got her into trouble if she liked one member of a family and disliked another member of that same family. But that didn't bother her in the least. But for Jesus, it's not about who we like and who we don't like. It is not about who we are blood kin to. Because you see, anyone who does what God wants us to do, Jesus doesn't just say any of my followers who happens to do what God wants us to do. He says anyone. That could include Mohandas Gandhi. It could include people from all ages and all traditions who love God and love their neighbor as themselves. These are brothers and sisters. Just like last week, Paul is trying to say we are all related because we have one God and we come from one source. So Jesus is saying we're all related, but what we're related by is our ability to do what God wants us to do. The only problem is we often wind up in groups with people that we don't particularly agree that they are doing what God wants us to do. And sometimes that reflects on us because we're part of the family. Don't you know that there are Muslims all over the world, and I know there are in this community, who are absolutely mortified by what ISIS is doing. Do not want to be associated with that at all, and yet, because they supposedly share a religion, they are implicated somehow. People assume that they agree with these horrific acts, which they deplore, as we deplore them. We should have some sympathy for that, you know. We really should. I don't know if you read it, but this last week, the Equal Justice Initiative issued a new report on lynching. Added some numbers to the number of African-American folks who had been lynched between 1877, the end of Reconstruction, and 1950, the year of my birth. Now, that does not mean that lynching ended in 1950. It did not. What they found is that right at 4,000 African-American men and women had been lynched in the South during that time. Now, lynching was not just hanging somebody. It involved bodily mutilation. It involved burning people. It involved hanging as well. And it's very interesting. We are offended terribly by the pictures on social media of what's happening across the world. But they didn't have social media, so what they did was they created postcards. Do you know that? Not just photographs, but postcards showing the charred and mangled and mutilated bodies of people with white folks standing around grinning, proud of what they had done, men, women, and children. You want to be associated with that? That kind of Christianity? I don't think so. I don't. And yet there are many people who would say, if you're a Christian in the South, you must agree with that. I didn't. My parents didn't. I mean, no. These are not people who are doing what God wants us to do, whether it's ISIS or whether it's those folks who, because of the race of another person, felt like they could mutilate their bodies, burn them, hang them. And no one was ever convicted of the crime of lynching. It happened at the hands of persons unknown, even though there were postcards with people standing there without masks on. We didn't know who did it. Seems like we ought to be able to identify with those Muslims who feel like they are being implicated by actions that they deplore, done by people who claim to share their religion. Maybe they are our brothers and sisters as well. On a little lighter note, there are those folks within our community who really step up and I think live out what Jesus is teaching about brothers and sisters here. One of those is Kayla Mueller. You may have heard about her. She was taken hostage by ISIS. She died, or her death was confirmed this past week. They did not kill her. She was killed, at least according to them, by an airstrike by a Jordanian aircraft. But she had been held hostage since 2013. She was 26 years old. She had been a part of the campus ministry at Northern Arizona University, in which United Methodists are a part of that ecumenical campus ministry. And she was known for reaching out to those in need. She was known for serving those who were on the margins, ministering and helping those who were HIV positive. And then finally, her commitment to doing that took her overseas. And it was because she was there helping refugees that she was captured. And in captivity, what did she do? She taught her captors songs. She taught them origami, how to make peace cranes of all things. She did not treat them as enemies. She treated them as brothers and sisters, just like Jesus said. That's how we know Jesus still wants us to love our families, you know. He said, love your enemies. Huh. What about when enemies then become family? She died doing it at 26. But I'll tell you what, that 26-year-old taught this 64-year-old something about how you follow Jesus. How you step up and actually try to do what he tells us to do, rather than following the crowd, rather than letting our prejudices and hatreds rule us, to let the crazy idea that we're all brothers and sisters rule us. Even the people who hate us are brothers and sisters. I thank God for Kayla Mueller, and I'm sure many, many other folks out there like her whose names I don't know, whose stories I haven't heard. They give me hope. They are those folks who, I believe, are doing what God wills, loving God and loving their neighbor as themselves, and inspiring me, and I hope you, to do a little bit better on that account as well. Thanks be to God for Kayla Mueller and all those brothers and sisters everywhere who do what God wants us to do. Thanks be to God.